Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. So many neat things happening here at Bob Enyart Live and in Colorado. A lot of feedback from our program last week. Montana is ground zero for dating dinosaurs. That was an exciting program and a good overview of where we're at, the creation movement and dating things that are supposedly millions of years old, even a billion years old, and finding carbon-14 atoms in them. It's very exciting because they don't last millions of years. They only last thousands of years, and we find them everywhere we look, and that is just devastating for the old Earth lie. It's devastating. The greatest enemy of evolution is modern science, because if they're not billions of years, obviously evolution could not have occurred. And it couldn't have occurred anyway, but that's yet another nail in its eventual coffin. So that's a lot of fun. And we have scientists who say that they're getting closer to creating artificial life, life from scratch. So we'll talk about that. And I discussed that with the atheist I debated at theologyonline.com. Every so often at TOL, TheologyOnline.com, one of the most popular theology forums on the internet, they have a battle royale. What are they up to now? Battle Royale 13 or something like that. I did Battle Royale 7 and Battle Royale 10. 7 was Does God Exist against their resident atheist, Zaketh. And Battle Royale 10 was whether the future was open or settled. Is the future settled or open? And we took the position that God is free, and God has a will, and God is creative. He's a creator, and therefore the future must be open, because who can constrain God? So, anyway, that was a blast, Battle Royale 10. And by the way, we have that. We sell that. We sell both of these, Battle Royale 7 and 10. One is a debate with an atheist, and the other is about the nature of God and the nature of reality. Is the future settled or is it open? And both of those sell well for us. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee on everything. How many places can you go and get a money-back guarantee on books? Do bookstores offer money-back guarantees if you don't like the book? I don't know. I never heard of such a thing. But here at Bob Enyart Live, we do. And I don't know, in all our years of doing this, have five people asked for their money back? I don't think it's been five. In years. But we have this open theism that is so exciting, talking about God being free. He has a will. He's able. He's creative. And we now have that on a DVD set. It's Open Theism, the seminar with Bob Enyart. And it was filmed before a live audience in Indianapolis. We had people attend from states all around the area, and it's a three DVD set, a full seminar, and it's just so much fun. And the covers are beautiful, huh? It's just a beautiful product, and you learn a lot about God and about God's Word and the nature of God and the nature of reality. It's really, really fun. So an example of the materials that we're putting out here at Bob Enyart Live. But I bring that up because of this article that scientists are trying to create life from scratch. And in my debate with the atheist, Battle Royale 7, I asked him a question about how the first living cell would develop. Okay, that's what I asked him. And so we'll get to that article and that question in 1 minute. But first, a short email we received from a man who was the assistant mayor of New York City at one time. Now, he's just emailed Colorado Right to Life. This is exciting, huh? He ran for governor of New York in 1990. His name is Lewis Wayne, W-E-I-N. Lewis Wayne, W-E-I-N. And he said, please add my name to the list of those condemning the partial birth abortion ruling. He is a right-to-life leader, activist. He's been in the fight for many years. And so, assistant mayor of New York City, candidate for governor of New York in 1990, Lewis Wayne now adds his name. That's pretty cool. And so now for the artificial life story, and then Ted Nugent. Somebody sent us an audio clip of Ted Nugent talking about self-defense and what do you do to a rapist and things like that. Said, Bobby, you're going to like this, but we'll play that in a moment. So now, artificial life likely in 3 to 10 years. This is from the Associated Press science writer, Seth Borenstein. And he writes, around the world, a handful of scientists are trying to create life from scratch. You got that? From scratch. And they're getting closer. Now, that would be an awesome accomplishment because life is so wildly complex. And how do you do that, right? And so imagine their difficulty in doing it, and they have some of the most brilliant minds and millions of dollars of research equipment, and they're going to do everything they can to create life. And they want us to think that it just happened by the laws of physics, by chance occurrences of chemical reactions. And they can't say natural selection created life. That's their make-believe ploy with evolution generally. But natural selection can't help you create the first life. So I asked a question to this atheist, to Zakif. This was my fourth question in our debate, Does God Exist? Battle Royale 7 at TOL at TheologyOnline.com. I asked Zakif for my fourth question, please give an explanation, just in broad terms, of how a simple first cell could perform the necessary functions of biological life. Okay, so just explain in broad terms, not specifically, just in broad terms, how could the first simple cell come together? For example, I wrote, I believe the functions of that first cell must include the ability to process raw materials, to contain itself, in other words, a membrane, right, a cell wall. It must include encoding instructions, implementing instructions, chemical processing, metabolism, basically, reproduction, which whole system is itself irreducibly complex. So the first living cell would have to do all those things. And just the cell wall is very sophisticated because it has to keep the contents of the cell inside and keep all foreign objects out except for the raw materials that it wants to pass to enter in. So the cell wall has to have sensors to identify what outside raw materials are wanted in the cell and what is junk or would destroy the cell and keep that stuff out. So now we get to this article from the Associated Press out yesterday, August 19th, 2007. Scientists are trying to create life from scratch and they're getting closer. They think they'll have something within 3 to 10 years. They're doing this in Venice, Italy. That's where one of the groups, Protolife of Venice, is located. Venice, what a beautiful city. What a waste of their space. No, it's not really a waste. It's just the mindset and the worldview of many of the scientists involved in this would be an anti-Christian worldview. So that's the sad part. But they say, let's see. Several scientists believe man-made life forms will one day offer the potential for solving a variety of problems, like eating toxic waste and so. And this scientist in Venezia, as they say over there, in Venezia, the scientist Mark Badau, he says there are three major hurdles to creating synthetic life. Three. It's a good number, but it seems too small of a number. I think my question is Zakif came closer to identifying the serious hurdles. But he says, first of all, you need a container or a membrane. Okay, that's his first. I put that in my question to Zaketh, right, in Battle Royale 7. I said that I believe the functions of the simple cell must include containing itself, like a cell wall, a membrane. So he says, a container or membrane for the cell to keep bad molecules out and allow good ones in. Two, he says, a genetic system that controls the functions of the cell. Okay, so you need an entire genetic system that controls everything the cell does, a complete instruction set. And three, a metabolism that extracts raw materials from the environment as food and then changes it into energy. And then they say that the problem of the cell wall is not really all that difficult. They say creating a cell membrane is, quote, not a big problem, unquote. Scientists are using fatty acids in that effort. Now, do you get this? They said that they're attempting to create life from scratch. Where do you find fatty acids? Where do you find fatty acids? Well, don't look at me. I don't have any fatty acids in me. I mean, fatty acids are typically in our bloodstream when fats are broken down, ready to be used by cells to convert into energy. Isn't cholesterol in your veins? Isn't that part of fatty acids? So anyway, fatty acids you find in living organisms, right? So they say we're going to create artificial life from scratch. And the first problem is we need to create a membrane, so we're going to use fatty acids. Ah, you're cheating. You're going to create life from scratch, artificial life, and then you're going to start with cheating. It reminds me of the scientist who said to God that it was really no big deal to create life. And he said, I could do it on my own. So God said, all right, fine. So they made a bet, you know, whether or not the scientist could create life on his own. So the scientist walks off and he scoops up some topsoil, some dirt. And God says, you go get your own dirt. You get your own dirt. You want to create life from scratch? Get your own dirt. God made the dirt. Now, the dirt worshipers, people who worship the earth and the environmental wackos and all, they hate the creator. They worship the creation. But if they're going to create life from scratch, they should start with their own fatty acids. Make your own. Don't start with byproducts of the life that God created. I mean, you could do that, and that would be an accomplishment, but don't misrepresent what you're doing to the public and say you're doing this from scratch. Okay, and they say, of course, there's no way to predict what would happen if they eventually are able to create life. Now, you know how we have computer viruses? And that was a metaphor, a figure of speech. We took the biological concept of viruses, and when people write code for a computer that multiplies itself and spreads from one computer to another, we call that a virus. I wrote for years for PC Week, Ziff Davis, a major computer publication. I wrote, I think, 88 articles for them and some of their editorials. That's when Microsoft hired me, I think mostly to shut me up so I wouldn't be writing against them in PC Week. But anyway, that's back in the late 80s. So we called it a virus. And so it's a metaphor, right? It's a parallel. But you know what I think will possibly happen one day? I think you'll actually be able to send a real virus to someone over the internet. I actually think that someday will be possible. Because a virus is a string of amino acids formed in a certain way. It's not really alive, right? And we now have decoded a handful of viruses, and we make machines for assembling and reading chunks of DNA. And eventually, we'll probably have printers that instead of printing paper, they print biological organisms, and they have them in a lab. So you could read a virus in a lab in America and email the description of that virus to a scientist in Venice, and he could print it out and actually get an actual virus. Now, a virus is not alive, as we understand life. A bacteria is. Bacterium is. Virus is not. So maybe someday we'll be sending actual viruses over the internet. And that will be wild, of course, and dangerous. But so anyway, we'll keep up on this, whether or not these scientists are able to create life, artificial life, from scratch. But already in this article, they don't know what from scratch means. From scratch means don't start with raw materials you take from living organisms. Take from inanimate sources and make life from scratch. And like God said, go get your own dirt. Okay, now, one of our listeners sent us an audio clip from Ted Nugent. And we've talked about Ted Nugent over the years. He's not a Christian, but he really despises liberals. And he makes fun of animal rights people. And he talks about how in Africa, where they have hunting regulations on elephant herds, they cull their herds and they have strong and healthy elephant populations. In the countries where the liberals have got a hold of their policy and they've outlawed elephant hunting, they have no revenue in the elephant industry, so to speak. And in those countries, their elephant herds are nearly extinct. And so he makes those kind of arguments. He was debating a well-known animal rights activist, and he made that point. And she said, I remember how she responded to Ted Nugent. She said, I don't care if every last elephant in Africa died, as long as you're not allowed to shoot one. And he said, that's it, I won the debate. And we've long said that animal rights activists, it's not that they love animals, it's that they hate humans. They hate people because people are made in God's image and likeness. And so when you have a greater love for animals than you do for people, you're fundamentally broken. You're a broken human being, and you're lonely probably, and you're at some level in rebellion against God. And it's sad, but it's recoverable. You could recover. You know, we could recover from any malady up until the day we die, any spiritual malady. Okay, so now let's go to this audio clip sent to us by a listener. Let's hear Ted Nugent.
Second Amendment, gun control. You've been on the NRA's board since 1995, mm-hmm. and this is a subject that you maybe feel more strongly about than any other.
I believe that a
make your case.
I believe that a person's moral compass can be determined by how he references free men the right to defend themselves. The Second Amendment is so obvious to me, it's insane that there's an argument. God gave, let's pretend there is no document. Let's pretend brave families didn't leave the tyrants and the slave drivers of Europe so that they could practice the religion of their choice, so that they could speak out without being murdered, that they could produce wool without the king's men coming and taking it from them every season of harvest. Let's pretend none of that happened. Let's just pretend this guy named Ted Nugent parachuted onto Earth and woke up one morning and saw these wonderful resources and had dreams of excellence and being the best that I could be. I don't need a document, and I don't need another man to explain to me that I have the right to defend my gift of life, and that there is an argument in America from Hillary Clinton, from Barbara Boxer, Dianne Feinstein, from a whole gaggle of who would try to tell me they will dictate where, how, and if I can defend myself. I find that preposterous. I find it unacceptable, and I will not accept it. I am a free man. Don't tread on me. A good law-abiding citizen, not convicted of a felon. The Second Amendment of our Bill of Rights is my concealed weapons permit. Period.
That's it.
That's it.
So no limitations of any kind that you can see?
None.
That's it.
The limitation should be, instead of arresting people for molesting children 24 times, I would rather the dad walked into the room, found a person molesting that child, and blew his brains out. I would rather that the lady in Massachusetts last month, who was taking her daughter to soccer, who was carjacked by a recidivistic maggot who'd been in the prison system all his life but was let out again because we feel sorry for him. Maybe he had a bad childhood. Instead of her being hijacked and murdered, I'd rather she just... But in Massachusetts, somebody decided she can't do that. So she's dead. I would rather she was alive and the carjacker was dead. I'm weird. I would rather that the guy who beat this lady to within an inch of her life in Waco, on parole was he, phenomenal, and beat her to within an inch of her life in front of her grandchildren with a whiskey bottle, I would rather she fell to the ground, pulled out a .38, and shot him 6 times in the chest and killed him. Am I weird? Because the guy is going to get out again. I don't like repeat offenders. I like dead offenders.
Dead offenders. Wow, pretty interesting. And I think that gives us a couple topics to discuss. No limitations on gun ownership. Let's talk about that. What are the proper limitations on gun ownership? And he called, what did he call that rapist? He called him a recidivist maggot. Now, what is that? Is that the Latin term? Scientific term for a certain kind of insect, a recidivist maggot. In other words, recidivism, the guy had been in and out of prison, people molest children, there's sex offenders who rape women, and they get a second shot at their victims. And that is wrong. And when they commit a crime again, then it's the lawgivers and the governing officials and the judges and the defense attorneys that share in the guilt of those secondary crimes along with the criminal. So that's all really tragic and a result of people who run our government who don't know right from wrong. And it's hard to keep up the righteous indignation, the anger, because it's systematic, it's systemic. All the people that are the victims of sexual crimes and violent crimes and even theft, where people's lives are destroyed, fraud that leaves a family struggling for years. It's pretty devastating. So Ted Nugent, we need to pray for him that he becomes a Christian. Maybe he'll clean up his vocabulary a little also along the way. But when he said no limitations, I was in a debate with a guy who was a member of the Libertarian Party, and he said, a local Colorado a politician wannabe kind of guy. And he said there should be no, this is downtown outside the Capitol. He and I are in a debate in front of an audience. And he said there should be no limitations on the right to bear arms. You should have any type of weapon you choose. And that, of course, is ridiculous. It's self-defense. You shouldn't be allowed to arm to prepare to take on a battalion in your backyard. So I said to him, well, how about a nuclear weapon? Let's say there's a Muslim living in Denver. He's wealthy. He gets oil money sent to him from the UAE or Saudi Arabia. And so he's building a nuclear weapon. Should he be allowed to build a nuke? And this goofy libertarian candidate, he said, yes, he should, as long as I have the right to strike back. And I said, you know, you can't strike anything if you're vaporized. And that's pretty ignorant. Self-defense, there are limitations. It's self-defense. Not that you could arm to take on an army. That's not the right that an individual has. A nation has that right to build an army. And I know the guys who like to, the weekend warriors who like to form militias and say they're arming and training to protect the country, and they think they have the right to do that. No government, unless it were insane, would allow another army to form and train within its own borders. Because if we let you do that, Mr. Kooky Man, we also have to let the Muslims do it. If they're American citizens, and they're going to form their militia. And then what? Overthrow the state house? So that's wrong. And recidivism, yeah, if a man is a rapist, a child molester, and then he lives to commit another crime and take another victim, then that's the fault of the system. So Ted Nugent, you know what? If Christians weren't so feminized and wimpified, Ted Nugent, he's a man's man. He could be an evangelist today. But probably the only Christians he ever interacts with are the wimpified ones who say, oh, we have to forgive that man who molested all those children and tortured them. We have to forgive him. We can't judge him. Oh, but they'll judge Ted Nugent. Why will they judge Ted Nugent and Brian Rohrbaugh and Colorado Right to Life and Alan Keyes? Why will they judge them but not the wicked? What's with that? I guess I do get it. It comes from this antenna, the sense we have to always go after the flesh. That's what it is. We have to judge with righteous judgment. Judge with righteous judgment. So anyway, Ted Nugent, that was pretty interesting. So thank you to our listener who sent that in. We appreciate that. And the banquet coming up, Colorado Right to Life has a banquet coming up. Now, on September 21st, the Columbine Memorial will be unveiled. That's going to be a big day, significant, because the words that are inscribed on Danny Rohrbaugh's part of the memorial, they have not been made public, and the media has been asking and wanting to know. So that's September 21st. That's a month from tomorrow. The following day is the Colorado Right to Life banquet. Former Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein is speaking. And it's going to be an extraordinary night. Could you please be there? Join me there. And you could call Colorado Right to Life, 753-9394. 753-9394. And Maranatha, what a great school.